The Pacecast from Pace Communications, hosted by Anita Pace and very special guests.
Saddest thing in life is wasted talent, and that's what I tell all these kids that I work with in the community. You got one opportunity, one chance. This life ain't no dress rehearsal. You gotta make the most of it. Had I quit, that ending song would have never have come. So I think it's important in life to, you know, find a way to hang in there, dig in, and make it happen. It's like the law of average, you know. The law of gravity says if I throw this up in the air, you know, the law of gravity says it's going to go down. The law of average is the same. If you decide to keep going and you don't quit no matter what, the law of average says eventually you're going to get lucky. So just find a way to keep going. Like, it's not what you sell something at, it's what you buy at. That determines your profit margin, because you can only sell something for so much because there's so much price comparison. So the art of the deal is in what you can buy at.
Hello and welcome to our Pacecast. I'm Anita Pace, thank you for joining us. My guest today is someone who's forged a very successful career in sport and now also in business. He's also someone who believes passionately in giving back to the local community. I'm delighted to say that my guest today is Tommy Coyle, ex-professional boxer, Commonwealth champion turned entrepreneur. Hi, Tommy.
Hello.
How are you? I'm very well, thank you. And thanks for coming in. I know you've got an exceptionally busy time at the moment, so thank you for doing this.
You're welcome.
For those of you who've not listened to this podcast before, we do ask our guests to bring in something that's special to them, something that's memorable, which has a lot of meaning. So I don't know what Tommy's brought in. He's going to share that with me and explain why it's so important to him.
We're diving straight in here, aren't we?
Straight in.
So it's some pictures. And I leave them on my top of my underpants and socks in the morning. And they're just pictures of my father and just memories that I have with him. So they're just a reminder every morning to get up, even when you don't want to get up, and get to graft, because the only thing you get for staying in bed are bed sores. And he was the biggest inspiration in my life, my best pal. He was my boss. He taught me everything I know about life and forging a career in the ring and outside the ring, and he inspires me still, even though he's no longer here. So it's just a nudge every morning. Obviously, there's a picture of me mum and me dad there. I kind of, although she's my mum, I've kind of took her on like my wife as well, because end of the day, he was a protector and provider. Yeah. So, you know, I'm the oldest in the family, the eldest son. And we come from a very old school family, so she's now my responsibility. It's just a reminder every time I put my socks and my undies on.
Which hopefully you do every day.
Yeah, every day. It's keep going, son. I've taught you everything I need to know. I've done my job as a father. You know what to do, go and do it.
Oh. Well, clearly he's been a big loss to you and to your family, and we'll no doubt come on to that later. But let's dial it right back then. So the early days of Tommy. I understand you got into boxing quite early, so talk about that.
Well, I was 6 years of age, and I think I was just a bit of a whirlwind of a kid. Just abundance of energy. And my dad had a good pal called Carl Heath. I don't know if you know
him. I remember Carl Heath.
Yeah, well, Carl was, you know, a very familiar face in the city.
Yeah, he was.
And he come from a bit of a troubled past. You know, he was an orphan. And he was a good friend of my dad's. And I think he realised that I had some of this energy that he once had. And he kind of took me under his wing a little bit.
Right.
And he took me down the boxing gym when I was 6. And I just fell in love with the game. I just fell in love with the individuality of it, the physical aspect of it. And I wasn't actually very good, but because I loved it so much, you know, I worked extremely hard in it. And I think it's fair to say, I did. I made a career out of it.
When did you realise, or maybe it was your dad who realised, that you had the potential to make a career out of it?
I think I was 18 and I kind of hit a crossroads. I was getting into a bit of trouble as a young kid. I was expelled from school. I'll be honest, I made all the wrong decisions a young lad could make growing up. And I actually got kicked out when I was 16. I was kicked out of school when I was 14. And my dad kicked me out when I was 16. And, you know, it's crazy because I have so much admiration, love and respect for him. But then there was times where we was, you know, sort of volatile to one another. But I believe he did what he had to do to me to make me the person I needed to become. So I think, I say he was a genius. And kicked me out when I was 16, so I had to go and start foraging and, you know, looking after myself, and I was up to all sorts.
And where did you live then if he kicked you out?
I lived in a friend's house, 135 Bavia Road, Heddon, and I hated it. I absolutely hated it, but I was that stubborn. I didn't tell him. So it was a two up, two down. It was a quarter house, and I'm still scared of the dark to this day, by the way. And I used to push the sofa in the front room up against the front door just in case any burglars was going to come in, because I was scared. I was scared of living on my own.
We're still very young, 16.
But I remember I was, because we're market traders, he used what we call a gypsy ring, a diamond gypsy ring. I think he bought me it for my 16th birthday. And I remember pawning it at Pledgebrook Pawnbrokers on Oldness Road. And I went to B&M Bargains or Home Bargains, whichever it was, and I bought all my utensils and just my bits and bobs. And then my mum moved me in. And it must have broke my mum's heart. But without going into it too much, it was an old school family, and what he said went, sort of thing. So,
but you obviously applied yourself.
Yeah, I did. Probably in the wrong way sometimes. I was selling fireworks. I was, you know, pinching scrap metal. I come up with an unbelievable business idea, which I thought was an unbelievable business idea. And obviously I'd probably got to 17 by this time, was driving, and I thought it'd be a great idea to, telling this story. Maybe I shouldn't tell this story. Yeah, maybe we'll leave that one out.
All right, we'll leave that one out.
Yeah, I made a few mistakes growing up. I did, and I think I learned from my mistakes, and I said I went from Queen's Gardens police station to Madison Square Gardens. So, you know, it was a hell of a journey.
So talk to us about that journey then. So was it about 18 then when you realised you actually could make something out of
the boxing? I call it my turn back moment. I remember getting into this, you know, sport of trouble with the law, and it was like, what am I going to do? Am I going to keep hanging around with these guys, you know, earning a few quid here and there? By the way, we wasn't doing anything super illegal. We was just ducking and diving. Mm. And I thought, is this what my life's going to look like? And I decided from that point that I was going to give all my attention and all my energy to boxing. And I can physically remember switching my social media. So, like, at that time I was posting things, you know, when I was out with friends and I might have been out for a drink or whatever. And I just remember making a decision then, and I've later learned that it's called brand, to stop posting those silly things, put all my energy into boxing and make a go of it. And because of my style of fighting, and I think because of my personality outside of the ring, people did gravitate towards me, and I had a good career.
So that was a pivotal moment then, that when you turned to the boxing ring.
Yeah, it did. It, you know, saddest thing in life's wasted talent. And that's what I tell all these kids that I work with in the community. You got one opportunity, one chance. This life ain't no dress rehearsal. You got to make the most of it. I try to tell the kids in terms they can understand. I say, if you was going to rob a bank, would you take a tenner or £1 million? Some kids say a tenner. And I'm like, why would you only take a tenner? I said, you've robbed the bank, you're going to get into the same amount of trouble. I said, you might as well take the £1 million. I said, it's the same in life. I said, you've got to get out of life as much as you possibly can, because you're only going to be here once.
So let's talk about the boxing then. You clearly had a very successful career. But I mean, I can't believe you're only 35. You've achieved so much. You're
only 35. Old, right?
You do not look old. Talk about the boxing. You clearly, that was a pivotal moment. You applied yourself. You're a hard grafter, to use your word. Hard work doesn't frighten you. So how did you go from, to quote you, Queen's Gardens to Madison Square Garden and winning the Commonwealth Games?
I wasn't actually a very good boxer, technically. Technically, I wasn't very good. You know, we've got another fantastic, phenomenal boxer, I must say, in this city, Luke Campbell. And I will say as well, a lot of... I owe a lot of my success to Luke. I have to say that, because if Luke hadn't won the gold medal and brought big-time boxing to Hull and the TV cameras, I wouldn't have had, you know, that platform. And sometimes everybody needs a dance partner. But in terms of how I forged my career, I think it was for having a big heart, being courageous and being relatable. Sometimes when you are this poster boy and sometimes when you're this boxing superstar and the very, very best, people can't relate to you because it's too far out of reach.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas if I was this slugger that kind of defied the odds a little bit and people could relate to me, like, you know, he's just one of the lads at the end of the day who's having a scrap in life, in the ring, and he's working out. And every time I did get beat, you know, I didn't lay down, I didn't quit, I didn't, you know, call it a day. I dug my heels in, a little bit like we all have to do in business or in life. And just when the adversity did present itself, I kind of said, right, come on then, let's go.
And I must ask the question, you mentioned Luke there, do you get on?
Yeah, really, really well, because I have so much respect for him.
Well, but there was that intense rivalry. Well, maybe it was just the media building it up into a rivalry.
Well, no, there was, and I think it was a case of Chinese whispers.
Oh, right.
Because me and Luke grew up together in an amateur gym. We travelled the world together. It was always far better than me. Every time we used to box, in actual fact, when we fought as professionals, the Hull KR Stadium, the shot he initially hurt me with was the same shot he used to hurt me with as a kid.
He obviously knew they could get you with that one.
No, I left, don't change your spots. But I really, really respect him. And now, I mean, immediately after the fight, I was so disheartened. I was so embarrassed. You know, and it was a tough pill to swallow. But now I look back on it with such fond memories, because it'll probably never happen again in the city. You know, two local lads fighting at a stadium. We kind of divided the city.
Yeah, yeah.
So what a great time to be alive. What a great event to be a part of. It's in the scrapbook.
Yeah.
It was wicked.
That scrapbook must be full of fantastic images and obviously memories. You mentioned they're travelling the world. Am I right in thinking the Commonwealth you won, would that be in Australia?
No, we did travel to Australia, myself and Luke, as kids when we were 16 to fight against the Australian team. But the Commonwealth title fight was in Liverpool against Sean Dodd. And that for me was like, it would have been the last dance had I not won. It was like I'd kind of...
So how old would you have been then?
It was 2018, so what are we now, 6 years ago?
Late 20s,
28, 29. Mm. And I really had like a bit of an Indian summer in my career. The last 3 years was the best. But I think what's important is, in such as life, them last 3 years would have never have come had I quit.
Mm.
You know, when Luke beat me, when Derry Matthews knocked me out in front of 15,000 people, local fans as well, had I quit, that Indian summer would have never have come. So I think it's important in life to, you know, find a way to hang in there, dig in, and make it happen.
So what influenced the decision, shall I say, to make, how did you decide enough was enough?
So I won the Commonwealth title, then I got the opportunity to fight in America, which was my American debut. It was the American dream. I did consider retiring when I won the Commonwealth title because I thought, quite nice for me to go out on top. I knew I wasn't world class. I knew I probably wasn't good enough to be a world champion. But I thought, do you know what? I'm going to go and have a dance in America. And I went over to America and I boxed great. It was quite an entertaining fight. The American fans, the Yanks, as we call them, loved my style of fighting. And then I got another opportunity to fight at Madison Square Garden on the undercard of Anthony Joshua versus Andy Ruiz, which turned out to be a historical night in boxing because Ruiz beat Anthony Joshua. And I was on the undercard. I was very early. There weren't many many in the Madison Square Garden, but I still was
fought there.
And I, in the build-up to the fight, not many people know this, actually. Well, nobody really knows this. In the build-up to the fight, I was struggling with my eyesight. I kept getting a lot of double vision. And it was in and out. Some spars would be great. I didn't have any issues. And other spars or on the pads, towards the back end of camp, it was, if I remember rightly, I was getting this double vision. And in the fight against Chris Algieri, who, you know, was a former world champion, boxed Manny Pacquiao, Povodkanov, you know, Spence, boxed all these great fighters. I hit him in round two and I thought, hang on a minute. Maybe I can do this. Maybe I can pull it off because I really hurt him. And it just wasn't enough. And then the fight went on, round three, four, five, six. And my eyesight was starting to deteriorate in the fight. And at the time, I thought it was a mistake, but I said to my trainer, Jamie Moore, I'm getting double vision. And that was it. He just pulled the fight. And he said to me later on, he said, look, Tom, he said, there's more to life than boxing.
Yeah.
And immediately, you know, I was so cross with him. I was so mad with him. He pulled me out of the fight. He'd thrown the towel in at Madison Square Garden. I was once again, you know, super embarrassed. Because I'm the type of guy which, you know, I'm willing to die in the ring. You know, go out on
really?
My shield. Yeah, that was my mentality.
You weren't willing to lose your sight, surely.
No, but that's the thing. When you're in a fight, I'm to the core in anything I do. Anything I do, I'm to the core. And what Jamie was actually saying to me was so right. Because when you're a boxer, you're extremely selfish. You have to be. It's a very individual sport. But I look back on my career now and I don't really even recognise that guy.
Yeah.
I don't recognise that guy that was so severe in his thought process.
Yeah.
And
I mean, I've never stood in a boxing ring and had someone throw a punch at me, and I hope I never do. Does it hurt?
Well, this is the thing, because I trained the rugby team and I think rugby's a harder sport than boxing. And they can't believe that I say that. But the thing is this, when you get chinned, as we call it, you obviously don't see it coming, because if you saw it coming, you'd get out of the way of it.
Yeah.
And your lights just get switched off. So in answer to your question, no, you don't feel it. What you do feel is body shots. Body shots are the worst feeling in the world. And I had a really, really memorable fight, which most boxing fans talk about, against an Argentinian boy called Daniel Brizuela. At the Ice Arena, and he actually won ESPN round of the year, round 11. There was like 8 knockdowns in the fight, 4-point deductions. It was just like a hellacious war for 12 rounds. And I was down like, what, 4 times. But do you know why I couldn't quit? Because my daddy was there ringside. Oh. Just couldn't do it. I couldn't have gone for a coffee with him the next day.
Would he have been disappointed if you had?
Yeah, I think he would. I think he would. He'd have still, you know, put his arm around me, but deep down, he'd have been disappointed, because we're of a belief that if you can look up, you can get up.
Mm.
If you ain't out, then you ain't out. You know, you got to find a way to keep going, just like he did so many times, raising 4 boys and, you know, keeping a roof over their head. So, and, you know, I got up every single time and I ended up knocking the guy out in the 12th round. So it just goes to show, if you can... It's like the law of average, you know. The law of gravity says if I throw this up in the air, you know, the law of gravity says it's going to go down. The law of average is the same. If you decide to keep going and you don't quit no matter what, the law of average says eventually you're going to get lucky.
Yeah, you're
going
to succeed.
So just find a way to keep going.
So I want to move on to your business success in a second, but highlight from your boxing career then, because there's been the obvious ones like the Commonwealth title, but you spoke so fondly there about the local derby with... Derby, is that the right name for a boxing
match? Yeah, Derby, yeah.
Yeah, Derby match with
Grudge
Luke.
Grudge match.
Yeah. One particular highlight, was it New York, was it?
Yeah, I think it was Madison Square Garden, even though I got beat. You know, I realised I wasn't world class, I wasn't good enough, but it was still the highlight, because for me, that was my pinnacle. So to be able to say in, I think, anyone's career that you reached your pinnacle is a job well done. And I did. I went world class. I was never going to become a world champion, but, you know, I think I touched the rainbow.
Yeah. And you shouldn't be so much. You were very successful as a boxer. I mean, you maybe not the world class, as you say, but you were you made a good career out of it.
I think I was gifted boxing to create a vehicle which allows me to drive change in the community.
So let's talk about that then.
That's my biggest achievement.
Yeah, so you moved from a very successful boxing career and sporting career. Because I'm always interested in this. People who are successful in sport and then their sporting career comes to an end as bodies start to get old and injuries, etc. And then they have this massive vacuum in their life where they've got up every day and that's what's motivated and driven them. And suddenly they have to find something else to do because they're all still quite young. So you... As I said at the beginning, you're very keen on giving something back to the community. So talk to me about that and then that transition into business.
Well, I actually started business while I was still fighting. I started business in 2016. And it was because I'd obviously been beaten to Luke Campbell and I'd kind of created this inner city brand. I was already doing good things from like 2014. I started my business... Well, it wasn't a business. It was more just, I thought, I'll open the gym in 2014. I've actually been in business 10 years, July, the 26th of July this year. Oh,
congratulations.
Like 10 years a day. Is it that decade?
Yeah.
Yeah, decade in business. Wow. And so I opened my first gym in 2014. And initially it was, if I get knocked out, I can open my gym and I can do a bit of personal training and get £25-30 an hour. I can make ends meet. I can pay my bills. I've kind of got a plan B because, like I said, I was expelled from school. I've got no education. All I've got is my street smarts. So we did that, but I kept winning. And the gym grew, the brand grew, and I eventually decided to open a wellbeing company on the back of a bit of a chance meeting with Finbar Dowling, who I'm sure you know.
Yeah, Siemens.
Brought Siemens Gamesa to Hull. We created the brand while I was boxing. And I think I wanted to do that because I'm the type of guy which needs responsibility. I need a purpose. I've always needed a purpose because if I don't, then I can easily get distracted. So when the boxing did end, in what, 2020, January 2020, I couldn't sit on my backside and feel sorry for myself that it was over because I had built a team of 10, which all relied on me for a salary. They've got, you know, their own families. My three children of my own, a wife. So I had to get up and go to work. And there was also so many kids in the community which was relying on me. So it really, really helped me transition away from boxing because I didn't have too much time.
Because you had the responsibility.
Responsibility. And yeah. I think, you know, young men in general, need that responsibility.
So you mentioned the chance meeting with Finbar. So this was to create your fitness and well-being business.
So we obviously have a gym business. We've got three gyms now. And we've also got a well-being business. And initially... So we've got TC60 and then we've got Coil Health. Coil Health didn't even exist. And Finbar said to me, could you potentially come to my factory and build me a wellbeing program? We're building this, you know, team and business from the ground up. We want a bespoke wellbeing program. So I went down there and I said, yeah. But I didn't actually know Siemens Gamesa was back then. And I didn't understand how big it was and how in-depth it would be. So I kind of just had to hold my hands up and I said, look, Finbar, I said, don't really have an off-the-shelf product for you, but what I'll do is, I said, is I'll work at Siemens Gamesa in all the different segments, in all the different roles, and I will come up with a bespoke plan, a bespoke program, which complements your factory. And that's what we did. I worked there for 18 months before even signing any sort of deal with them. And I, you know, kind of embedded myself in the company. And we've built a program. So what we do now is we go around identifying, you know, wellbeing problems and provide them with bespoke solutions. And then COVID happened. Yeah. Just a whirlwind. So I guess our USP, which was going in there and identifying problems and being very, you know, front facing, was taken away from us because we couldn't go in. So that presented was with an issue where we had to innovate really quickly, and we built a digital app, and it's just gone from strength to strength since doing so.
Because the app is still in use, isn't it?
Yeah, the app's still in use. we've scaled the app. So we're working with numerous different companies now, you know, Paragon, the Sewell Group, PPH, Willoughby Caravans, Centrica. So it's really cool at the minute. We keep going offshore.
Yeah.
And I mean, the helicopter scares the life out of me. But it's wicked. Like, I'm a kid off the estate, expelled from school, and I'm getting on helicopters to go to work. It's so cool. And yeah, things are good, you know. Things are really good.
So you're actively involved then in the health and the gym businesses. And you still work on the market stall, your dad's market stall.
Yeah, I'm literally going to leave today. I'm going to JZ Flowers to pick all the flowers up because it's Mother's Day right on Sunday. And I'm going to take them back to the stall, and I'm going to flash them up, as we call, just put them on display, and hopefully sell them for a profit.
So what does a typical day look like for you? I sense that every day is different. You're here, there, and
my
everywhere.
Life's a whirlwind, Anita, yeah. Honestly. Like, so 4 o'clock, alarm goes off. I get up. Have a look at my pictures, put my undies on, put my socks on. And then I go off to Dennis Butler's. I buy the gear for my dad's fruit store, because it still is my dad's fruit store. And take it back. We set it up, we flash it up, we make it look pretty. And then I go to the gym, usually get to the gym for about 6:30.
Is this which gym? This one?
My gym on Bridgehead Business Park. I'll train because I need to train still. Like, I'll be honest, I struggle since losing my dad a lot. Like, and if I don't train, you know, it just helps me out. Mm. So I get in the gym 6:30, train, and then it's usually around 8 o'clock. There's a lull there in the day where there's no classes or there's nothing really going on. So we get the team together, have a catch up, have a chat, set some goals. Look at the action plan from the week before, and then, yeah, off I go, doing whatever I've got to. Sometimes I've got meetings. I was in London on Monday with the Connexing guys for Khan and Alex and High Bay. And then yesterday we was due to fly offshore to the rig.
This was Centrica, right?
Yeah, and we got called off because of weather, so the helicopter couldn't take off. So it's a real mixed, you know, like, kind of job role, if you like.
Which bit do you enjoy?
I love buying the fruit.
Still going back to the role.
Because, like, it's not what you sell something at, it's what you buy at. That determines your profit margin, because you can only sell something for so much because there's so much price comparison. So the art of the deal is in what you can buy at. So I love going down the market and buying the produce.
And getting a deal.
Yeah, getting the best deal.
So looking back over your career today, because as I said earlier, it's still only 35. Anything you'd have done differently?
I think, not so much my career, but it's a tough one, really, because I wish. Oh, God, it's so hard because you never know what to say on these things. I would have treated certain people different. Those people, you're very selfish. And I think when I started doing relatively well in 2013, or not so much relatively well, but You kind of get a little bit lost, and I remember, you know Mike Issa, right?
Yeah.
He gave me some of the best advice in my life, and I'd been beaten from Luke Campbell, and I'd kind of got a little bit lost, and I was buying clothes. My car had changed. You know, the places I ate changed. And I think I was in the middle of a little bit of escapism. I'd just been beaten to Luke Campbell. I was very embarrassed. So I felt like I had to put on this facade that I was okay.
Right.
I was doing all right. I wasn't hurt. I wasn't embarrassed. And yeah, I kind of got lost. And I remember my geezer calling me and saying, "Tom, I need a favor. Can you meet me at the Trying Inn?" So I met him at the Trying Inn and I said, "Mike, what can I do for you?" Mike had done loads for me in you know, recent years. And I thought, you know, I can finally pay him back, like, you know, do something for him, a favor or whatever he needs. And he said, "I need you to do something for yourself." So I said, "You know, what is it?" And he said, "You've only got so much water, you know." I was like, "Oh, what are you talking about?" I was like, "You've only got so much water." I went, "Right." He went, "And I can see you planting all these little trees." He said, "You know, you've set your business up here. You've done this. You've done that. You're trying to go to this event, do that event." He said, "And you're watering all these little trees." He says, "But what about the big tree?" He said, "Don't forget to water the big tree." I went, "I know, Mike." I says, "But I want to be like you when I'm older. I want to, you know, be successful." And he went, "Don't forget to look left and right." And I'm like, "What is this guy talking about?" And he said, "Stop looking too far in front." He said, "Look left and right, people your own age, your own, you know, on a similar path." He said, "And you'll realise you're not doing too bad." And I remember kind of looking left and right and, you know, relating to people that I'd kind of on this journey with. And I was doing all right. And it made me just take stock a little bit. And whilst I was out doing whatever I was doing, and, you know, the people what loved me was there waiting for me to come back down to earth a little bit.
Do you think you're better at looking left and right now?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah,
I think you are, based on what I know of you. And I would say that you are good at that now.
Yeah,
100%.
But, you know, we never lose, we only learn. And you, as a young man, you know, growing up, you have to go through these things. And I'm sure Mike and everybody went through all these things. But that's the beauty of being older and wiser. You can send that information back down in the elevator to the next generation. So I guess that's where I'm at right now. I'm trying to, you know, and by the way, I'm not sat on this podcast making out I'm some multi-millionaire who's super successful, who's got all his eggs in a row. Like, I'm not, honestly. I've still got a business plan on the back of a cigarette box, like, you know, that type of stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love working in the community with kids, trying to improve minds and change lives.
Well, if you could change one thing about yourself, just one thing, what would that be?
Possibly my ego.
I don't think you've got a big ego.
Yeah,
you're managing it very well then.
No, I do. I think I changed my ego a little bit. I get a bit upset because, I would change my ego.
Okay. You've got a lot going on business-wise at the moment, and I think we're recording this in March, but you're opening a new gym tonight, you were saying earlier.
Yeah, I am. I'm opening the gym tonight on Humber Street. It'll be our third gym. It's been super stressful, but I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a bit of a different gym, you know, because we've this gym is based in, which I think is fast becoming one of like the business sectors of Hull. Like, you've got all these super big offices. Your office is on there. C40I, we've got Arco, the Wycombe Group, Hudgels. So I think we're trying to aim it at all the businesses where they can come before work, during work, and after work, because wellbeing's becoming really, really big and popular, you know, in the workplace.
Yeah, yeah. So with all these activities that you've got on your plate, what keeps you awake at night?
Oh, wow. I struggle sleeping, you know, and it's...
It's all those knocks to the head you've had over the years.
No, it's... It's linked to the ego thing. It's probably too deep. It's too deep. But losing my dad leaves me not... I struggle. That's what keeps me up on a night. Just, I've got this void in my life which I can't fill.
But the exercise you said earlier about to go and train every day, that's helping.
Yeah, no, 100%. And again, having this responsibility in the community, at work, with my family. Like, I've got three boys of my own. I can't call
it... three boys again?
Yeah, I can't call it a day because I've got to raise them. You know, I've got to teach them boys everything that my daddy taught me. So...
What do you want for the boys? What, you know, if you're looking ahead 20 years from now, what's your vision for those three?
I want them to be good people. I say good, not nice. I want them to be good. I want them to work hard. I want them to make sacrifices. I want them to persevere in times of adversity. And I want them to just go all in. I want them to be not scared of making any mistakes. I said earlier off camera, like, I've worked extremely hard to obtain all the things I never had growing up. Like, I grew up in a house where, by the way, we wasn't a poor family. We got what we needed, but we by all means didn't have everything. Like, you know, we had a TV where you put a pound in the side of it and you used to get 6 hours. And my mum had a gas card, electric card. I think she's still got a gas card now because she likes to know where she is every week. And I've worked so damn hard to get everything I've got. But in doing so, maybe have I spoiled it for my kids, because they ain't going to see some of the hardships I saw growing up. Like, I can remember, Anita, honestly, my mum sat cutting round a £20 note with newspaper. And I'll tell you why, because my dad was a terrible gambler. He'd done all the money in. And he'd said to my mum, he said, "I've got four £20 notes left." And this is quite genius, this. "I've got four £20 notes left." He said, "Have we got any old Daily Mails left?" Remember the old Daily Mail you used to get in the paper? Everyone reads it online now. But he says, "Have you thrown the old Daily Mail?" She says, "No, I've still got it." He says, "Right," he says, "I want you to cut the whole Daily Mail the size of a £20 note." And this is about the art of buying. Because my daddy used to take me to work every day, well, every other day with him down the market. I had a different upbringing to my other brothers. He showed me how to do the job, do you know what I mean?
Because you were the eldest.
Because I was the eldest, yeah. And I remember he'd done all the money in gambling, and my dad, he always used to wear a hoodie. And if his hoodie was proud, looked like he had a big belly, it meant he was flush.
Yeah.
It meant he had a few quid, because my dad didn't even have a bank. Well, he did have a bank account, but he didn't use it because he didn't like his money being in the bank.
No. That's old school, isn't it? Don't trust the banks.
No, if he had a direct debit coming out tomorrow, he would put the money in today.
Yeah.
He was that type of guy, and he'd just put enough in. And the wholesalers would know that if his jumper was proud, he was flush.
Right.
But if his jumper was down here, he was having it hard. Anyways, I'll never forget it. It was just coming up to Christmas, and he'd obviously done all the money in, and he was going down the market the next day, but he only had 80 quid. So my mum would cut the newspaper around these £20 notes to make it look like he had a wad. And he used to put it in the mushroom bags, the brown paper bags, mushroom bags. And he would always get it out, stick it on the wholesaler's side, so they knew he had a few quid and he was good for it. Anyways, this one particular day, he was bluffing. And he went, right, it was Pete who actually works at Dennis Butler's now, still in the same game. And there was an actually bang opposite your office. You know where the corner of Humber Street is now?
Yeah.
Well, that corner facing your office was called Consolidated. That wholesaler's was called Consolidated.
Right.
We went into Consolidated. I'll never forget, it was stood near the banana room. And my dad started rushing all the wholesalers, trying to confuse them. And he's going, right, Pete, I'll have a pallet of this, pallet of that, boom, boom, boom. Putting a massive order in. And he's going, "Pete, how much do I owe you? How much do I owe you?" And Pete's saying, "I'm serving Chris. I can remember it as clear as day. I'm serving Chris. I'll sort it." He says, "Pete, I'm late." He said, "I've got so much to do." He says, "I need to be off." He says, "Well, put the gear on." He says, "And square it tomorrow." Got the gear on, got to work. And you get 30 days on an invoice today, don't you? We got 24 hours. And we got to work. We turned the money, we turned the stock into cash. And we was back to work. We had our cash flow again. And yeah, I sometimes think, do you know, if I did lose everything that I've got, it wouldn't be a bad thing because I could show my kids the get back. I could show my
kids. So are you deliberately not trying to spoil your kids then? You
bring them up? I do spoil them. I can't help myself because I'm such a giving kid. But I make sure they understand. Like, I'm a type of parent which will wake them up at 3:30, 4:00 and say, right, I need you today. I need you to come to work with me. I don't need them to come to work with me because they can't help me in any way, shape or form. But just getting out of bed and doing something that they don't want to do, but doing it anyway, like we all do as parents, is good for them.
It's good discipline.
And like, I'll have them jumping in the bins and squashing the bins down so that they know we can get more in that bin and we ain't got to pay for another bin. So pay for one bin rather than two bins. Have them breaking the boxes up.
Do you think, have any of them shown any desire to go into boxing, any of the three boys?
No, they haven't. My middle boy, Arthur, can shape up well. He can fight, but he's a really, really loving, caring boy. You know the most thing I'm most proud about? My boy's manners. I have a phenomenal wife, by the way. She's my best friend ever, and she's from a different background to me. We are like chalk and cheese. She's a good, good lady. Comes from a good family, and she's brought the boys up so well because I'm not as available as much as Hull because I'm out grafting, I'm out earning a living. She's done a phenomenal job, and my boys are so polite. Like, they ain't like me, they're so different. They're placid, they're polite, they're caring. But then my oldest boy, Archie, he loves his football. And you know what? I hope he didn't watch this back in years to come. But
I'm sure he will.
He's not a world beater, but boy, does he work hard. He's so disciplined.
But a bit like you with your boxing, though. You admitted you work
and
well.
And that's what I keep saying to him. I said, son, sometimes you just got to outwork the talent.
Mm.
Because in the boxing game, talent only takes you to round six, round seven. Then later rounds, it's about who wants it the most. Yeah. Who's got the biggest cojones?
Your brothers are footballers, aren't they? So he's maybe taking after his uncle.
Yeah, well, they do. They look at Louis, my younger brother Louis, who I'm so proud of. And they aspire to be like him more than they do me. And I'm okay with that. I'm so okay with that.
A little less violent. The football pitch.
A lot less violent.
Okay, I'm just conscious of time, so we're going to wrap up. Future plans then, you've still got a lot of years ahead of you. What's the ambition for
I'm in the middle of relocating my East gym. I go straight back to the community and I want to create this home for talent, but a family for everyone, like with young kids. A place where they can come, it can be their safe haven. It can be, you know, a place that they come to create a pathway for later on in life. And I just want to be that diversion and direction for these young kids, like boxing was for me. Mm. That's, I think, where my real passion lies. But I understand that I can't pursue that passion if I'm not earning a living in my Whirlwind Company, because ultimately the Whirlwind Company supports the foundation. Yeah. So I don't want for too much, really. The cupboards are full at home. I've got a car. I've got a home. I'm actually really, really content. Like, I don't miss boxing. I'm super content. But I probably want to improve my team's lives a little bit. They're all young guys, having young families now. I want them to get a few quid. I want them to be successful and, you know, enjoy the fruits of the labour. I'm very much about giving back. I think maybe it's maybe selfish, you know. I think about this a lot at the minute. Maybe selfish because I've got these hang-ups on my own life and I've tried to skate around them a little bit today because people have perception, right? And I don't want to come in because I know you have a fantastic network and I don't want people to think, you know, he's wild, that guy. But, you know, some of my lives have been wild. Some parts of my life have been wild. And I just, I think it maybe helps me deal with my own stuff I've got going on and my own little conscience to give back a little bit. And if there's anywhere worth going when it's all over, maybe I'll get a place there.
I'm sure you will. What advice would you give to the young Tommy?
That's a great question. What advice would I give to a young Tommy? it would be to make the most of your education, even if it's not what you want to do first and foremost, because how nice must it be to have a plan B if plan A don't work out? And sometimes, don't overthink and overplan. Pardon my French, sometimes you've just got to think, fuck it and find out.
Mm. Well, that's served you well thus far.
Yeah, it has. But also, I have some extremely good people around me. Gather good people.
Mm.
Like, I'm so fortunate to have the likes of, you know, Mark and Mike, Mark Blow is Mike Easer, Paul Sewell, you know, I mean, Neil Hudgel, so many great people around me. And get the right, I've been successful, I think, because I've managed to get the right people on the bus and put them in the right seat.
Yeah.
To help me drive the business.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not the smartest person in my business. People are way smarter than me, but I gather good people and I look after them. I like to think I pride myself on looking after them. Some people say I'd give too much, but I just think you look after your team, look after you.
Yeah. Good. I think that's a nice place to stop. Thank you, Tommy.
You're so welcome.
It's been fascinating listening to your story, and I'm sure if your dad was here, he'd be very proud. Well, he was very proud of what you achieved.
I made it through the podcast about crying, hasn't he? That's a success for me.
Yeah, it was touch and go for a minute, but we made it through. Yeah, thank you. I do appreciate it.
You're so welcome, man.
Before you disappear to pick your flowers up, I've got a question that was left by our previous guest, and he didn't know who he was leaving it for. And it's a very good question. I like it. And the question is, what's the worst advice you've ever been given?
The worst advice I've ever been given? God, that is a good...
It is a good question, isn't it?
It's a great question.
I like it.
The only way I can answer that is, if it's the worst advice I've been given and I've gone and done it, then I've learned on the back of it.
Mm.
So I can't really think of what that advice will have been. Maybe I can. Maybe pinching all the fuel that we pinch with the different registration plates on his kids was bad advice.
Yeah, there's maybe a few things in there.
There's probably a lot of bad advice I've had as a younger kid. But professionally speaking, not so much.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Otherwise, we've got a whole other podcast to do. No, seriously, thank you.
We left so much out.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Really appreciate it. So that's it this month. Thank you for joining us. If you do like to get in touch, do so on our normal social media channels. We'd love to hear from you, and we look forward to seeing you again next month. Until then, bye-bye.
This Pacecast was recorded and produced by Engine 7 Audio, award-winning audio production.